John, here's a question. In the hymn, Come Thou Fount, the second verse reads, Here I raise my Ebenezer. What is that?
I don't know. By the way, I went to, we had a time with the guys over in Louisville, Kentucky, and one of the guys gave a workshop, and he said, when you're working with men, be sure that you have the phrase, I don't know, because you don't know everything. And I don't know.
All right, here is one, a question on seasons of life. How do we know when or how to keep focused on our role? Explain the danger of staying in one season when we should have already moved on to the next season.
That's a good question, and I didn't give enough on that the other day. The seasons of life contain what we're doing. For instance, the seasons of life of age would be years. Spring would be up to whatever, 25, 30, 30 to 50, 50 to 60, 65. When you get 65 or 70, you start thinking about these people are old men, old people. But let's say a person don't come to Christ until he's 40 years old. The season of his or her life is they're in the spring of life right now. A new Christian needs the same thing, regardless if they're 15 or 5 or 45. So keep that in mind. Generally, seasons of life, we get married usually in our early 20s, sometimes in our 20s, sometimes a little later. I got married at 35. That's a little bit late for a pattern, you see. Then my children got married in their 20s, and they have children. But my grandchildren now are young, and I fellowship with a fella over in Oklahoma City, my running mate, Bob Potter. He's younger than I am, and he's got great-grandchildren. See, so there's a pattern there. Mostly it's in our thinking. Be sure you think correctly. Talking to my son, he's 45, 46, and I told him, I said, Jay, I really, my prayer is that these next 10 years are your glorious years in construction work. A 60-year-old construction supervisor or project manager is mature. You know, he's on the mature side. But 49, you wouldn't say he's all that old, you see. So there's a period in there to work on things. And I was talking to him about investments or something to live on when you're 60, 65. Hustling, get out there hustling in the construction work. Get out there hustling concrete. And so on when you're 65, 70, see, that's just no fun, you know. And so you want to prepare. You are going to get 60, 65. You really are. You really are. That's going to take care of itself. So you want to take care of things as you go along. It won't always be like it is today. It'll be different.
One of the things I remember in an earlier year in talking with us on the phone about seasons of life is it's not so set in concrete like your ages.
That's
spring,
that's,
summer.
That's correct.
And it's different with different things, like in the area of money.
That's
like
right.
You didn't even own your first house till you were 60.
That's right.
You didn't buy your first house till you were 60. Well, a lot of people buy their first house in their 20s.
That's right.
So it's more like the stage of development of some area,
very
arena
good.
Of life, rather than an age.
Very
correct?
Good. Very good.
Okay.
Very good. Finances is a thing you really want to work on seasons, because the idea is, well, if I don't do it now, I won't do it. If I was talking to a fellow, and he says, well, the children are going to leave. Well, if you don't have the money, don't do it. You know, that it's just like that. I can't go along with the philosophy. If I don't do it now, I don't do it because my children will leave. Therefore, I got to borrow the money.
Still on seasons. How do you help a man who has sown foolishly or sinfully? What scriptures have been helpful in your experience in this area? So a guy has sown foolishly or sinfully, and I guess now he's come to Christ and he's wanting to change, but there's a lot of water under that bridge.
You have to go over with him. You get forgiveness from the penalty of sin, but not the effects of sin. David, 30 years old, about, and he very successful. And it came the time when kings go to war. And he had a general, Joab, who was his cousin, and he was at war. And David was at home, and he was on the patio on top of his house, looked out and saw a woman bathing. And he sent for her and took her and had adultery with her, and she became pregnant. David had a problem. It wasn't sexual need, because he had six wives. A man with six wives shouldn't have a sexual need. And so, but David fell into the sin of one more conquest. Yeah. One more conquest. So he conquered one more. And then you know the story all too well. How he tried to get Uriah, her husband, to come back and sleep with her, and he wouldn't do it, and so he had Uriah killed. David got forgiveness. The prophet said that God has forgiven you. David got forgiveness. But he had one man killed. In the Bible, it teaches that if you steal a man's sheep, you have to pay for it with four sheep. David had one man killed. He paid for it with four of his sons who were killed on battle. We reap the same kind as we sow. And David poured out his heart, and we have all those beautiful psalms. And God himself said, I found David, the son of Jesse, man after mine own heart, which shall fulfill all my will. But in this life, David had a rough time. So if we have a working with a person who has in his background many things that he's going to suffer the effects for, we just have to work with him and help him go through it, because it's going to come. Then you can't avoid it. He's forgiven. 1 John 1:9, he's forgiven, but the effects are the same. Ecclesiastes 7:17. Be not overmuch wicked, neither be thou foolish. Why shouldest thou die before thy time? You've heard it said, well, you won't die till your time comes, and your time comes, you'll die. That's incorrect. Ecclesiastes 7:17, you says you can die for your time. Get out on a motorcycle, get drunk, wheezing down, you can die for your time, boy. You sure can. Get forgiveness from the penalty of sin, but not the effects of sin. I witnessed to a fellow aboard ship, and he was from Arkansas. Good old boy. He says, Crawford, when I get back home and get out of the Navy, I'm going to get my life squared away. Well, I hope he did. Because I caught him in my shop one day committing sodomy. So I hope he did.
This is similar and on a related topic on seasons. Do you have to know what season you're in to be able to be a part of the harvest? And is there a benefit to knowing what season I'm in? I guess this is a cry or a question of clarification. How do you know what season you're in?
You don't have to know what season you're in, but don't be a fool. What was that?
He said you won't get caught for poaching if you know what season
you're in. You don't be a fool. My eyes aren't sufficient to go hunting. My dentist has been a very good friend of mine and befriended me for years and years. I took my goose gun, Browning automatic, 3-inch, full choke magnum. Boy, it was a doll, an absolute doll. But I can't swing it like I could years back. See, years back I had another 15 pounds, you know, and more alert and enjoyed it, you know. That season's gone, boy. Face it. Use this up here as well as this here. You know, use your head. Mom used to tell me, use your head, son. It's the little things that count.
What approach would you recommend to resolve a neglected area? This is a spiritual development area for someone in the summer season of life. So this guy, I guess, is thinking of an approach. There's a neglected area of spiritual development there in the summer. So what approach would you use?
I'd get somebody to help me. And someone with a good mind and no axe to grind. And to help me with how to develop, you see.
I'm going to jump in on this with me and you. When I started meeting with men, like here's Benny Carlton and Jeff Gill, Bud Harmon, some other guys, I felt very inadequate because I'd been a college worker fella, and it's like I hadn't really helped people. I think I'd done some things right in my life on sacrifice for Christ and management of time and money and stuff like that. But I didn't feel like speaking into their lives. I was either their age or younger. Mm-hmm. And I remember we talked at length about this. And that's the thing here. Here's someone in the summer of their life. How do I help them? Well, I remember talking with you, and one of the things you helped me with is it'll kind of resolve itself. Because a fella in the summer of his life has already gained a lot of wisdom and thought on how to live in a lot of areas.
That's correct.
And it's kind of like it surfaces itself. And there's a reason, if someone's looking to me for help, there's a reason for that. And I help them where they're interested, and I kind of like scratch the itch. Now, I'm not going to help somebody in an area in his life where he's really good and I've never had expertise. That just isn't going to happen. But then he's not asking me to help him there either. Now, that's another thing is, so that's one thing I've had to live with. Like when I was helping college students, it's pretty much, and that's one reason why I'm a proponent of, you're going to have your biggest ministry in people who are back about 10 years from you are, seems like, because you've been there. With college students is one thing, and then grown men, it's just, you just help where you can. Does that be a good reply also, John?
Very good. When I had the ministry in the Bay Area, Oakland, California, San Francisco, I met a couple of fellows that were executives, one in San Francisco and one in Emeryville, and they came to me for help, and I was apologetic to help them. They were 10, 15 years older than me. We were all mature. They were in their 40s, and I was in my 30s. So once they assured me that they wanted help, and I stayed in the Bible, I didn't try to help them in anything else because they were executives. So I stayed in the Bible. That's where they wanted me to help them. Now, with a young man, 20 years old, I get out from the Bible and help him in his development and other things, even without him asking me.
Yeah. See, like Bud Harmon's never asked me one question about helping him on his finances.
Uh-huh.
Isn't that right, Bud? Never have. All right, here's another one similar to that. I'm 20 years old, How can I become and remain content and still strive to achieve? So the topic would be contentment. How can a 20-year-old become and remain content yet still strive to achieve?
Striving to achieve would not interfere with contentment. 30:19 in Proverbs says, "The desire accomplished is sweet to the soul." In training a man, as I was trained in the trades, I had some masters who were very good. They would compliment me on my success. And that's one of the big things, is a compliment on a success. We have a little child. I was sharing this morning with the guys. We have a little child. And my little grandchildren, you know, and walking him along. He's 1, 2 years old, walking him along. And I said, "Grandma, look at it. Look at my boy, Grandma. He's walking, see? He's a man. He's making..." Well, I don't think you could call it a walk. It looked like a drunk man, you see? See? But for him, in his little ears, I want him to hear Grandpa's assuring voice. And I want him to... And now then they're up teenagers, and they still hear Grandpa's assuring voice. "The desire accomplished is sweet to the soul." That's one of the best ways to keep a person going. I have one boy, it's autistic. He was helping me load the car, the pickup. 11, 12 years old now. Shawnee. I said, "Shawnee, you have a basic characteristic that's going to help you in your life. You're a hard worker." I says, "You know what the word characteristic means?" He says, "Yes, that's a basic trait in your life." I said, "Oh." Compliment him. Not flatter, compliment.
I want to speak on this contentment because it came up earlier just a minute. Paul said in Philippians 4 that he had learned the secret of being content. Now that is profound.
Yeah.
Contentment is not a gift. Well, some have it, some don't. No, I think it's something we have to actually learn. And I don't know, I think to the man we have to learn. And it'll come out in different ways or through different areas, but he said, "I've learned the secret of being content in whatever circumstances I am." And I don't know if there's shortcuts, but contentment, how would you define that, John? What do you think contentment is?
Well, I think it's learned, like you say. I really do. "For I've learned what safe state I am, therewith to be content." We are where we are. I was a new Christian, found myself aboard ship, bobbing around on the South Pacific. Well, what are you going to do about it? Swim home? Ha ha ha. See? You know, we are where we are. But I'm worried about it. I'm frustrated. Well, that's a problem here. Learn to be content. I'm working with a man now, 50 years old. He did 30 years in the military, lieutenant colonel. He wants a job paying what he got in the military, $75,000 to $100,000 a year. Well, there hadn't been one available yet, and he's worked at it for months. Well, we got him a job paying $40,000, and with his retirement of $40,000 or $50,000, that put him up pretty close. The man that offered him the job, $40,000, said, "This job will pay $100,000, but not right now." In other words, you get in and learn, and you know, he wouldn't take it. He wanted it now, see. But he wasn't content. He wasn't content to start at the bottom and learn a new trade. And he's a brilliant man. He got 2 master's degrees.
Yeah, it seems like this thing of contentment underlies probably a lot of debt the problem of debt that people get into. I've got to have it now and pay for it later.
Yeah.
Isn't there a contentment issue there?
And then with the wife bit, you see, we get to analyzing situations and we're looking at the negative part of our wives, and we think, well, what would I, maybe I should, if I changed wives, that would help. That won't help. You see? Like a church. I choose a church that teaches the doctrine that I believe. And then I try to change the church instead of change churches.
Yeah, that wife bit. The problem when you change wives is you're the same.
Yeah. One of my buddies I was working with in a small town in western Oklahoma, they had a pastor, and he stayed 3 years, and he got another pastor, and he stayed 3 years, and he got another pastor, and he stayed 3 years. And he asked me if I had any input. I said, yes. He's on the board of directors or a board of deacons or something. I said, I'd look at the church. You know, getting three pastors in a row that can't hack it, that's pretty good odds. You can go to Las Vegas and make out on that kind of odds. See, I would look at the church and face the deacons and the elders of the church. Maybe they need to make some changes. That's the way I think.
All right, John, here's a question. Can you name one or two things that have been instrumental in helping you in the area of use of time? Name some things that have helped you in time use.
I've gone to some seminars, and several seminars through the years on the use of time. I've read books on it. And so it would be difficult for me to sit here and give a lecture on the use of time, or give even one or two points on the use of time. One of the things that helps is have your priorities straight. Which is straight? There's a time, you know, Ecclesiastes says there's time to laugh, time to cry, time to play, time to work. There's a time for everything, and we have to learn to do those things that are allotted for time. For instance, in my younger years, I could do okay with seven and a half of sleep. And then in my middle years, I really felt better with 8 hours sleep. Well, in these years, 9 hours sleep, you see. Several days out of the week, I get a nap during the daytime. Of course, you say, and I say too, man, I don't worry about it because I'm still putting in a good long day, you see. That's what we're after, see. I'm after putting in a good long day. I'm not after how many hours I sleep or how many hours I don't sleep, you know. When I was laying brick, one time the foreman come by, superintendent, and he said, boys, we're going to have another bricklayer or something. And I said, well, sir, well, these bricks are nice and straight and so on. Oh, man, he said, Mr. Crawford, they're very straight. He says, there's just not enough of them, you see. He was after bricks in the wall. That bricks in the wall. He wasn't trying to change society. See, we got an education system now that's trying to change society instead of educating, you see. We're trying to lay brick with a hammer, you know. We get all confused. But thinking straight really helps. And I've gone to lectures and read books on that.
What age range were your children when you met with them, disciple them? They're thinking one-to-one, like when did you start, when did you stop, how old were they when you would meet with them?
In my case, I tried to have time with my children from day one. The boy was about 14, began to ask me questions. He had done Sunday school stuff and all such as that, and he wanted some help, and I got together and helped him, and he said, Dad, how are we going to work this in the future? I said, well, I was hoping that you and I could get together weekly like I do with the fellas. And he said, I was hoping you'd say that. So he was thrilled that I got together man to man with him, just like I did with the fellas. With the girl, it was different. I never did get together with her on Bible study.
Did Helen?
She did some. She did some. I was telling some of the guys, when a boy come along, boy, we were doing so, making so much good progress, I was thinking about writing a book on how to raise kids. And then my girl come along, and I was thinking about having a book burning. Different ones respond differently, but do try to have time with them.
It really is interesting, as I listened to you see, Jay said, well, I was hoping you'd say that, Dad, because you said, like I meet with the fellas, I know that like with my two here, that's actually what happened. And then with the third one at home, we've set it up, and they know that I go meet with guys.
Yeah.
Well, how many of you here are doing that? Well, they know that. And so then that becomes something they would like to be included in. So there's a power of the draw, kind of, the pull.
Particularly with the boys.
Yeah. Want to be like Dad in that.
That's right.
So you're meeting with a guy, you're discipling him, and they know that. And you shared at the table what you read, or this guy and that guy. And it's just, it's kind of in the air. And it's easier.
And in my case, and I'm sure in your case, The fellows that I had, and we were in New Zealand by this time, and fellows that I had over for dinner and met with, and the boy met, he was challenged by them because they were fine young men.
Would you comment on accepting rebuke?
Yes. Reproof not a scorner, lest he hate thee. Rebuke a wise man, and he will love thee. Give instruction to a wise man, he'll be yet wiser. Teach a just man, and he will increase in learning. Proverbs. Now, no chasing for the present seems to be joyous but grievous. Nevertheless, after it yieldeth a peaceable fruit of righteousness on them which are exercised thereby. All the verses that I know in the Bible on chastening or rebuke benefit the person that's being rebuked or helped. And you could even water that down to the word exhorted. And someone quoted it earlier, Hebrews 10:24-25. Now let us consider one another to provoke and to love and to good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together as a manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. So to not take rebuke could be pride on our side. And if we never take rebuke, we're saying, I'm pretty hot stuff. I work with my father, and my father was a nice guy around the house. We lived on the farm, and poor folks. And Dad would do chores. He'd split the wood and so on, you know. And then when I got up big and I went to work with him on the construction job, he treated me just like he did the other man. And he was a driver. And I thought, boy, he's a two dual personality. Then we would go home and he would, sweet daddy, go to work. I've told you some of these stories. We were in Port St. Joe and we were laying brick. Foundation would pour down like that step. Then we were laying brick and brick it up about, oh, so high. And then the carpenters come along and build a house. Standing there and laying brick down below my feet, I raised up one time and I said, Dad, I said, laying these bricks down below your feet like this, and every time I raise up, my back just kills me. He said, son, try not to raise up. Then I got saved and I went to work with Doss. And there was a side of Doss that a lot of people don't talk about or even know about. And that was the side of a driver. And he was, his own testimony, he said, John, I don't warm up on you. I just dump the truck. I said, Doss, it might sound strange, but I'm beginning to pick that up. But when I was with Dad, I reached a place, I remember, where I said, I'm going to take it, because staying with Dad, I'll be a better builder and I'll get there faster. And I reached a place with Doss where I said, I'll be a better man and I'll get there faster if I stay with Doss. I'm not going to let anybody run me off. And I made that decision and made that commitment, and I did. And when we buried him up on the hill, I had the privilege of burying him with some other guys. I was up there later praying, and I praying out loud, I told God, I says, God, as far as I know, the only man worthy of running me off, we buried right here. By your grace, I'll never let anybody run me off. I'll never quit. And I think it's good to make commitments like that out loud between you and God. Never quit. That was 56. That was 51 years ago.
Well, it's interesting because this same card says, secondly, what can you tell us about Doss and his relationship with the Lord?
Well, you can read that in the book, Doss, and other books. In his early days, he was very zealous. He was also zealous in his latter days, too. But he started off in his early days in memorizing scripture. He was hard on himself, minimum sleep. He desired to put the Lord first. The reason he was hard on me, he wanted me to put the Lord first, too, also. He just put God first. Sometimes to criticism of others.
How do you keep up with current news and reading?
I look at one news a day. It's a 30-minute news, and I look at that during supper when I'm home. See, I haven't had any world news since I've been home, so I don't know. It might be falling apart. So I look at one set of news today. How do I do my reading? I do my book reading. I do my book reading through CDs, and I have a special cassette got from the library. My eye doctor gave me a permit. I went down to the library. I didn't, but Peter did. Peter Axup, who's worked with me. And I got, 8 or 10 books. And I'm reading a book now, The Millionaire Mind. It's Dr. Tom Stanley. He wrote The Millionaire Next Door. And it's how millionaires think. And it's what makes them think and what, for instance, millionaires don't gamble. The Millionaire Mind is an excellent book. I like it.
You told me once you didn't bother with fiction. You only read nonfiction, things that will be like self-improvement, right?
Well, nonfiction books. See, for instance, before World War II, Ford, particularly in the South Pacific in America, Ford had a good heart, good part of the automobile industry, and then Chevrolet and General Motors and Chrysler. Now then, there's no such thing as Ford in so many places. It's all Nissan and all Toyota. How many here know why? I can't see anybody, and of course I don't see good.
They're willing to make change.
Pardon? He said they were willing
to continually improve.
They're willing to make change and continually improve.
Why? See, very few people know why. And very few people could care less. Well, I just figured, that's strange. See? Well, there's a fellow named Mr. Deming. And Mr. Deming in the 50s went to the Ford Company and the Chrysler, General Motors, and talking. And he said, gentlemen, you're making a bad car. They said, Mr. Deming, we're selling everything we can make. He says, you're filling the world with junk, and it's going to come back and haunt you. Well, they continued. He went to Japan and they hustled Mr. Deming. And so he taught them how to make quality cars. Gentlemen, a white man taught the Asians how to make quality cars. And they listened to him. And so they've taken the world. See? Now, that thing, that, see, such as that, I'm answering your question. Yeah, why not fix it? Columbus discovered America in 1492 down in the Caribbean. The Aztecs had a city down there of 5,000 people. They had houses offshore, you know, and so on. We didn't get started up here till 1620 or so up in Boston, Mayflower. This is a first world country. That's a fourth world country. Yet they had 125 years start on us. Why? People don't, I talk to people, you see, well, such as that fascinates me. So I read books on it and study it.
This is different. Ready?
This is what?
Another one.
Okay.
All right, now, this is a fella sharing his heart. All I've reached out to have been the poor and the drug addicted. As a counselor, how do I go about changing the flagpole, my reputation? I'm known for what I do, but who I am is really different. Jesus mentions that we become all things to all people. He became poor and homeless even though he was rich. I have gone in debt even to help those that have been blind due to their sin. Help me with some insight on this.
I would like to compliment you and praise you and give you thanks for what you've done, because it's a very needed thing. I know a person who has sacrificed meeting with men to meet with his children. I want to get to him and tell him there's one or two guys who would like for you to help them meet with their children. He hasn't seen that yet. See? So I would encourage you to meet one or two straight people and tell them what you're doing. Maybe they can help you. If not, they can be encouraged by what you're doing.
One of the things that's challenged me, I know, as I've thought through on our vision of reproduction. The idea, I remember Doss said, why, Johnny, you could just raise up a disciple and he could do what you're thinking of and you could do something else.
That's right.
Well, why, we could bring this in. Why couldn't we bring this into Men of Valor? Or why couldn't we bring this into this gentleman here?
Yes.
Who's sharing? What if he started praying for God to bring another fellow around,
mm-hmm,
like him with his heart that he could train?
Yes.
And become a Timothy to him like Paul had.
Yeah.
And then he's got two of you, and then the ministry grows in that way.
That's right. Now, here's one thing we don't say out loud. You're working with animals, which I have. There's some animals we don't use as breeding stock. There's some people that just won't be reaching very many people who are going to reach person, who's going to reach person. But they'll reach one or two. Not that they can't, but they just won't. Everybody won't be a reproducer. Just like every couple don't have children. Most couples do, but every couple don't.
What is your definition of a godly life, and how do you know that your life is an example of a godly life?
A godly life is a person who follows God and brings God into all facets of their life. Their marriage, their money matters, their job, their raising their children. He is not excluded in any facets of their life.
He wanted this to be read. Have nothing to do with worldly fables, fit only for old women. On the other hand, discipline yourself for the purpose of godliness. For bodily discipline is of only a little profit, but godliness is profit for all things, since it holds the promise for the present life and also for the life to come. 1 Timothy 4, 7, and 8.
Very good.
So how do you see discipline in living a godly life?
Discipline, the word that comes from the word disciple, is necessary in accomplishing anything. John Mark plays football. There's a discipline in playing football. There's a discipline in learning how to write a book or what have you. Discipline comes into everything. You can't just wallow through life. You can, but it's not very profitable.
Okay, what are some things you have done and currently do to finish strong spiritually?
I bring God into all facets of my life, and I work on all facets of my life. As I've shared with you, I work on my reading, my outside reading, my Bible reading. I work on my back review, my verses. I work on my exercise. You know, I go to the doctor regularly. By the way, when you're 40 years old, you should have a physical once a year. You see? I know some guys, real spiritual guys, that don't go to the doctor. I think you're dumb.
What have you done to keep a strong relationship with your wife?
I bring my wife into everything. I pray for my wife several times a day. If she comes into my mind, I pray for her. I thank God for her. And then my wife and I had some good talks when we were first married. We decided we would talk about everything. And we do. We talk about everything. We don't share everything. For instance, if she's having time with a girl, and this girl is having marital problems, and this girl shares with Helen something about her husband, Helen doesn't tell me. See? It's none of my business. I'm not in on it, you see? I don't share things with Helen, particular naughty things, you see. Bible says, for it is a shame even to speak of those things which are done of them in secret. So I know certain things about guys I wouldn't necessarily share with Helen. You know, we don't share everything, but we talk about everything pertaining to us.
Now that's a good thing to think about. So as you're discipling and meeting with me, and that's a good rule of thumb. John, what's the scripture you just quoted?
Which one? About what?
It's Ephesians 5.
For it is shame even to speak of those things which are done of them in secret.
Yeah.
Now, it's in the Bible. Let's see. It's Ephesians?
Yeah, it's 5:12. 11, do not participate in unfruitful deeds of darkness, but instead expose them. 12, for it is great disgraceful even to speak of the things which are done by them in secret. Ephesians 5:12. Where do you see the Spirit of God moving today, John?
Murfreesboro, in this room. I don't know much about prophecy. I don't know if the Lord's going to bring up another evangelist like Billy Graham. I don't know. There's been a work going on in South Korea for many, many, many years. Largest church in the world is in South Korea. I wouldn't know, but... It's amazing when I talk to a guy and get him in the Word and he starts quoting Scripture and I see the God working in his life, you know.
And to hitch on that, I know that I met with guys for a while in the 90s and there was this popular study that people were doing. And one of the things that was stated was, find out where the Spirit of God was working and go join it. And I remember I had a guy share that with me, and it just didn't sit right. And I thought, wait a minute. That can be good, and it can be not so profitable. Because then I'm looking out somewhere and then go join a group or an organization or something. But see, if I have the Spirit of God within me, I wonder where God's working.
Amen.
There you go. And then when I'm interacting with people around me, wonder where God will work in those relationships. So think of myself as an initiator rather than a joiner.
That's right, and take the Spirit of God with you. See, it says, go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. Go into all and make disciples. It doesn't say if the Spirit's with you. You know, it says do it.
Last question. Why is 2 Timothy 2:2 not practiced widely in the local churches? Why don't you quote 2 Timothy 2:2 first?
Let's go with one. Thou therefore, my son, be strong in the grace that is in Christ Jesus. And the things that thou hast heard of me among many witnesses, the same commit thou to faithful men who shall be able to teach others also. There's different reasons in different places. And I got my own, but I don't know that it's profitable to delve into that. Why is not something being done? If you ask me about a certain place, and we go over there and look into it, then I can give you some suggestions. Mm-hmm. But I don't know what profit there would be to... I don't know that I know.
Well, hitching on that, John, how would you say that we navigators fit with local churches?
That's a good question. I think we should fit in cooperation. I think we should do what we can do to help the pastor, to help the leadership in the church, and if necessary, take leadership, or we may have leadership already. I wouldn't let the activities of the church keep me from making disciples. If your time is limited, then you got to make some decisions. But I think it's good to do one thing. I'm on the personnel committee in my church. I taught Sunday school for years. I don't teach Sunday school now. I just can't work it in. But I'm still on the personnel committee. I think you ought to be involved in the church in some way.
All right. That's all the questions. Let's give John a hand.